Podcast One presents the Steve Austin Show Classics.
And I'm sitting here with my guest today, one of the toughest guys on planet Earth. His name is Brock Lesnar. In about 6 days, he's going to face Undertaker in a Hell in a Cell match. And we're going to talk about that later because it's a big-ass, badass match. But, dude, first of all, I appreciate you being on the show. I know you got limited dates. You're a busy man. You're in demand, stopping by to hang out and see me because we've known each other for a long time. We've always gotten along. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. And thanks for having me on the show. It's what number of show is this for you?
I think this is number six. Number if we six? Don't kick ass, it might be the last one. So we got to kick a lot of ass. So if I get lost, I'm going to grab a headlock and call a high spot for us to get out of that.
All right. I'll be suplexing later.
Don't take me to Suplex City. I'm saying right now, don't take me to Suplex City. All right, dude, I want to start this thing off with, first of all, I want to have a little bit of fun tonight. Because here's the deal. I've known you since about 2002. I'll never forget when you first walked through the doors. I've told the story a million times. When I saw you, I said, okay, this dude, he got something. If you got anything, you got to look. And then I knew you had the national background, the JUCO All-American, the National Championship Division One in Minnesota. So I knew you was a badass. And here you are. But you're a guy that's very intimidating. Do you try to be intimidating? Do you get along with people?
No, I don't play well with others. But, no, I wouldn't say that. I guess I carry myself in an ambiance or a manner that people may find cocky or arrogant or... But I don't do it on purpose, I guess. I guess it's just the way I am. It's how I was built. It's my chemistry behind who I am and what I do. I mean, as a young kid, I've always I was the kid that got beat that was beating up the other kids on the playground. You know, I was always the one. I always had a chip on my shoulder, and I still do. I don't know why, but that's just my attitude.
But you weren't a big kid growing up? Because, I mean, I've watched videos. Dude, I YouTube you to death. I saw you as a big gangly dude, and you always had that frame.
Yeah.
You got picked on as a youngster?
No, I never got picked on.
Who the hell's going to pick on you?
I was doing the picking.
Okay, now you're speaking my language.
So, but, yeah, I had to work for this, you know, and it's a thing that... I just had this discussion with another fellow earlier today. Like, if I wasn't a professional wrestler, what would I be? Well, I have no idea. I think, but my passion for the sport of wrestling in general made me thrive in the weight room to become who I am today. So it was just many hours upon hours of pumping iron, and I wouldn't look this way if I didn't pump iron.
You're no kidding.
And so I mean it's been a long road.
You have this tough guy persona, which is a shoot. Going back, growing up on a farm, how did that help mold you into what you are today? Because I read in Sports Illustrated you said you knew if you could cut it on the farm, you could cut it anywhere.
Yeah, I think life on the farm, especially where I grew up in rural South Dakota, like we didn't have a hell of a lot to, you know, there wasn't extra money left over for us. Whatever our income was based upon how well our cows produced milk, how well our fields produced grain. And so when you live like that, and some years are better than others, you just get used to living like, you know, like you're broke, and we were broke, and so you just get it's a way of life.
But that dairy farmers, that's a lot of damn work.
Yeah, you're married to it. The cows got to get milked every morning and every night. There's no way around it. And so when a quarter to five every morning rolls around, it doesn't matter if it's raining, snowing, sleeting, hailing. You get your ass out of bed and go to the barn and milk the cows. That's how I grew up, and that's been my mentality as an amateur wrestler. I thought to myself, if I always put the hard work in, that it would always pay off, you know. And I always strive for that, and I always had it in the back of my head that it would. And by golly,
and I want to get to that. I want to get to the work ethic, because you work your ass off everything you've got. But there's some people who would say, oh, the dude works part-time. No, that's your deal to come in on selected dates. I want to ask you something, like, right now. You see this shirt I'm wearing, the camouflage shirt? This is what I wear when I'm hunting. So just to digress from what we were just talking about, we've been talking about this for years. When in the hell are you and me going to go hunting? You've been talking this trash about
you've been talking,
down to Texas.
You've been talking this trash. You've been talking because I got all the big deer up north.
Dude, we got big-ass deer in South Texas as well now.
Yeah.
Come on now. Okay, here's the deal. What's your schedule like? Because I'm going to get finished with this thing. I'm going to head down to South Texas.
You're right. We've been trying for years to make this happen. And I told you, I sent you a text message about a month ago. I said, we got to quit talking about it and just do it. So we'll work that out. We'll make it happen.
Okay, you promise? You shooting with me?
Yeah, it's a shoot.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, speaking of shooting, let's go into some – I got some questions. And I figured to get people to be able to know a little bit about Brock Lesnar, I got to go truck guy. I know you drive a truck. You're an outdoor guy. You're an avid hunter, fisher, just like myself. Ford, Chevy, Dodge. What you got?
I'm a Dodge guy. I always have been, and I always will be. I'm a Mopar fan. I've got Mopars myself. I've got a 68 Roadrunner. My dad's got a 1969 Super B. I'm driving a 2014 Dodge Ram 3/4 ton. But it's not nothing. I don't have it all geeked up.
Tell me about this guy right here.
that's my baby. I left that one for last. Yeah.
Brock sent me this on a text message, and he don't ever brag about what he's got. I got a Dodge Ram Charger that I shared with him. And tell me about this son of a bitch right here. Cause this is badass.
That is my $1 million project. I rescued that truck out of South Dakota. It made it all the way to Minnesota. I had a guy work on it and get it. I had this vision in mind of what I wanted it to look like when it was done. I converted that truck. It was a 360 gas.
Yep.
And I put a Cummins, 5.9 liter Cummins in it. And I won't bore you with the rest of it, but it's a 1978 Dodge Power Wagon. And it's got a brand new interior in it, and that's my baby girl.
That's badass. That looks like Brock Lesnar. Here's a question for you. You're a big hunter like I am. You're hunting a lot of big game across North America. What is your go-to caliber for hunting North America?
Well, right now, I got introduced to a gun, a 300 RUM, Remington Ultra Mag.
Yep.
And I just love the gun. It was made by, it was gifted to me by Christensen Arms I love the gun. I use it. It's my go-to gun whenever I'm heading out to, big game hunting. That's all I use right now.
I think it shoots hot, it shoots flat, and it hits hard.
Yeah, it's a big. I'm shooting a 185 grain bullet. It's big. It's a big gun.
Okay, what's your go-to optic? You're gonna go buy a scope off the rack. What's your brand?
I won't buy anything but Leica. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
On scopes or glass?
Everything. Everything.
Yeah, I got Leica binoculars, but scopes too.
Everything.
You're happy with that?
Yep.
I dig it.
Leica, I mean, Leica makes glass. They make glass for, filming what we're doing now, and even orthoscopic surgeons prefer Leica glass. I have friends that are surgeons, and they prefer that. So, I mean, it's bar none to me, top of the line.
All right. I always tell people if I was going to have my last meal, I'm a big fan of Mexican food. I'm a big fan of food in general. what is your favorite food?
Steak. And I can go. I grill my own steak, and I love to grill. I spend a lot of time on my deck, on my patios. I've got lots of land. I like seeing my. I don't like seeing my neighbors. I like to see my land and grill a steak and have a cold beer or a cold rye and Coke whiskey and grill me a ribeye, medium well.
Okay, now, man, I'm a little bit short attention span. I'm always in a hurry. I'm a gas grill guy. Are you gas?
No,
you doing the whole
no, charcoal.
Charcoal.
Yep. It's got to be charcoal. The big green egg.
Dude, I was just talking to Eric Bischoff the other day, and he was selling me on a big green egg. Yep. Should I get one?
I got four of them.
But they're high dollar, right?
I love them, man.
They put them over big today. Yeah. Work good?
Awesome. You can do anything. I've cooked everything from turkey to you name it. I've smoked stuff in it. I've done it all with it.
You mentioned your go-to drink. What, whiskey?
Rye whiskey, yeah.
What brand? What is that?
Well, I've been going to Canada for a lot of years now, And now I'm finally I'm settled up there, kind of full, pretty much full time. So I got introduced to rye whiskey up in Canada, and so that's my drink of choice right now, which has been for about 10 years. That and Coors Light, if you hadn't heard.
A little bit of Coors Light.
Yeah.
I got a beer I want to tell you about here down the road here in a little bit. All right, a little bit of chit-chat going here. I want the people to be able to get inside the mind of you and for you to disarm them and say, hey, man, this dude's a pretty chill guy, actually. If you can get within a few feet of him and he doesn't, you know, put you on an F5 and hurt you. Music.
My music of choice?
Music of choice.
I'm a hardcore country guy. I mean, I go all the way back to probably my all-time favorite is David Allan Coe and Willie and Waylon and you know, all the boys. Cash. And then on the other side of things, I'm hardcore. Metallica, AC/DC, you know, Motley Crue. I grew up with all that. See, I was the youngest of three boys, and then I have a younger sister. And so my brothers were all long hair. You know, my two older brothers were long hair, you know, rocker kind of. You know, they grew up in the 80s, and they were older than I was, and I thought right. That was cool. They had the leather jacket and, you know, the jean jacket underneath and all that and the chains and whatever. So when everything was cool like that back then. So I thought I grew up listening to that kind of stuff and then started working out with it. But I guess right now I like hearing young guys coming up in the country world too. And I came across this kid out of Saskatchewan. He's out of Swift Current, Saskatchewan, a kid by the name of Coulter Wall. And I think I sent you a plug on him this kid is, he grasped me from the very first time that I listened to his record, and I haven't let go of it since. I've been listening to it every single day.
You know what it reminds me of? Kind of like a little Johnny Cash, some yeah. Hank. I mean, he's all Coulter yeah. Will, yeah. But it's stripped down.
Yeah.
It's just bare.
Yeah, he's, I really like his stuff, and I wish him all the best. I'm a big fan of that right now. That's what's playing in my
truck. Well, I'm digging it right now. I'm glad you turned me on to it.
You're listening to another classic episode of The Steve Austin Show, only on Podcast One.
I want to ask you some wrestling questions now, the real questions, because, you know, you wrestle for a living. I used to wrestle for a living. You get to entertain. Hey, let me ask you real quick before I ask you this question. Are you a pro wrestler or are you a sports entertainer?
That's a good question. Is there a difference?
I just think it's the guard.
Man, I don't know. I mean, I would have to say that I'm in the entertainment industry. We sell tickets and we put asses in the seats. At the end of the day, everybody goes to college. Everybody comes out of high school wanting to make a living, and that's the American way, the American dream of doing what you love and getting paid for it, and then it's not work. That's how I feel about what I do. I just took a whole different path, and I thank God every day, and I'm very fortunate that I've been able to do the things I've done and make a pretty damn good living at it.
I got to ask you a question, though, because growing up, you weren't necessarily a fan of the business.
I never watched any wrestling at all, Steve. I never watched a lick
what
of wrestling.
What were you watching?
I never watched
working
any
ass off. Yeah.
I watched Little House on the Prairie.
No, the toughest badass person I ever had on a podcast. They just said Little House. Oh, no, you did.
Well.
That's all right. I'm bleeping out. We're on a 7-second delay. No, but here's the thing. I watched Little House on the Prairie, too. Hey, man, you got to give it up for Michael Landon. You got to give it up.
All right.
But you weren't a fan of the business. You never watched pro wrestling.
I wasn't exposed to it. We didn't have – I had two channels in the house, and they only worked part-time.
Right. So, but anyway, you come out of when you were in sports, did you play football?
Yeah, I played football in high school.
Okay, what position?
I was all over the place on that field. They had me playing defense, offense. I went from nose guard to running back to everything but quarterback.
Okay, but you did you excel at football as well? But because I know
I was good at it. Yeah, okay. I was good. I had more scholarship opportunities as a football player. I had zero opportunities as a wrestler coming out of high school.
Dude, I don't understand that because you were damn 31-2 or whatever is an insane number.
Yeah.
But okay, so here's the thing: you were more into the single aspect and not the team aspect of playing.
No, I was a good team player, I guess, but maybe I thought I was, but maybe I asked my teammates. Maybe I was ball hogging all the time. I don't know, but I was going after the ball. But no, I guess at the end of the day, you know, when I made the leap of faith when I left the company here and went to try my hand in the NFL, I was only there for 2 days, and I realized that I was a fish out of water. So I mean, it was. I knew early that these guys have been doing it. This is not my path of what I should be doing. But I lasted 8 weeks. I toughed it out. I didn't want to be a quitter, and so I made it through. I was the last guy cut from the Minnesota Vikings. That's just how I do things. You know, my mom always told me when you start something, you got to finish it. Well, shoot. 8 weeks of training camp for the Minnesota Vikings, that's a long time.
I want to jump back to your JUCO wrestling days and your scholarship offers because you went to two different junior colleges.
Yeah.
But let's stick to Minnesota real quick because you played high school football. You didn't play in college. And, man, there's a four-year gap there where you're specializing in wrestling.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, you know, you say, hey, man, I'm going to try football. And then you go into something which is technique-oriented, and you're a big badass dude, but when you're dealing with a bunch of other big badass dudes, the person with technique and repetition is going to win those battles.
Yep.
How humbling or how was it defeating? What were your thoughts on, I don't look at it as a failure, but it didn't work.
Well, here's the thing. You can't go through life. You're not going to be good at everything. I mean, I've been good at wrestling and fighting. And they kind of go hand in hand. But if you can't get humbled, I get humbled every day. And that's just the way of life. I mean, whether it's...
What humbles you?
Well, if it ain't my kids, it's something that I'm doing. See, I love to work with my hands. I like to do, you know, a white-tailed deer might humble my ass in a hurry.
Yeah,
you know, so
yeah.
I hunt a lot, and so I get humbled. You know, but at a young age, I learned, and growing up on the farm, you get humbled every single day. So you have to respect that. The thing is, the most important thing is not to quit. You know, so
right.
I didn't want to quit. I thought, you know what, I'm going to give this a try. On the second day of camp, I knew, man, this is going to be really difficult for me to do, and I knew that going in. But when you're out there and enduring the physicality of everything. It's a grueling sport, and I take my hat off of those guys. I did not, you know, I went to the University of Minnesota as a Golden Gopher and used to make fun of the football players as a wrestler, didn't think that they were very tough, and because you'd see them in the training room all the time and this, that, and the other thing. But when I endured an NFL training camp, I have to say it was one of the hardest things I've done in my entire life.
Going back to your wrestling days, why were you not widely recruited? Because
I was kind of I was an in between kind of guy. I wrestled 189 pounds as a junior, and then only my senior year bumped up to heavyweight because I was a team player and wanted to fill the team up. We had another guy that was going to fill in for at 189 pounds, and so we were short of heavyweight. So I bumped up to heavyweight and started competing as a heavyweight. I wasn't a true heavyweight, so I wasn't recruited, and I was kind of, people were maybe unsure if I was going to be a 190 pounder in college. I don't know, but I got beat twice my senior year, and those guys both went on to full scholarships to, you know, a Division I school and Division II school, and then I fought my way up through the junior college ranks.
Did you go to one junior college or two?
I went to two junior colleges. I went to Bismarck State College as a freshman and a sophomore, and won a junior college national title there as a sophomore. Then my sophomore year, I was recruited at the University of Minnesota. That summer, I moved to Minneapolis, and they were going to start. I was doing workouts, open workouts with the team, getting ready for the season, upcoming season. Then they started to get me enrolled in school. Well, I had taken classes only two-year term classes at Bismarck State that only didn't qualify me to go to the school of the University of Minnesota. Summer school already started, so then I had to – they called me into the office and said, well, you can't come to school here. And I'm like, well, what are you talking about? Well, you're 24 credits shy
right
of going to school here. Well, what should I do? Well, there's a school that we'd like you to go to, and it's out in California. It's the only school in the world right now that hasn't started class to, you know, and so I got in my car and drove out to Lassen Community College.
How did you like that, coming from the neck of the woods to the West Coast?
I lived in the basement of the wrestling coach's house, and this guy, literally all he ate was noodles and red wine. I had $400 to my name. My aunt lived in Bakersfield, California, yeah. I think, at the time. And I used her address as so I could get in-state tuition.
Right.
And I was paying $12 a credit. So I went to California with $400 to my name. My car broke down twice getting there. I left on a Thursday night, made it out there. By 5 a.m. Monday morning, class started at 8:30. I call the wrestling coach up and say, hey, I made it here. All right, meet me at the school. I'll go get you enrolled. I enrolled, and bam, I was in class at 8:30 that morning.
Did you end up getting a degree from University of Minnesota?
I did not. I never graduated.
So you didn't graduate?
No.
But anyway, you go to Minnesota. You have a hellacious career. Yeah. You finished number two in the nation your junior year, and then on your senior year, you win a national championship.
Yeah.
And from there, it's like, what were you thinking? Okay, here I am. I'm out of college. I'm a badass wrestler. What should I do? How did you fall into pro wrestling? Because you weren't a fan.
I fell into a rut, actually. When I won the NCAA title, I quit school. And I spent almost 2 months in the basement that I was living in, the house that we were renting. And I fell into probably some depression where I fell into a rut where I didn't know what I wanted to do with myself. The WWE had pursued some interest in me, and I had a few opportunities to try out for a few NFL teams. I got to meet Tony Dungy because he's a University of Minnesota guy. He was coaching down at Tampa Bay. And so I had an invite down there. I was just kind of – I had nothing to my name. I had no money. I had nothing. And I was just – the only thing I did every day, I'd get up, I'd work out because that made me feel good.
Right.
And I just hibernated for 2 months and didn't know what I was going to do with myself. And then finally my buddy, my roommate, Chad Kraft, who wrestled 157 for the Gophers, kicked me out of the basement and said, let's go. We're going to get out and, you know, go do something. So I got out of the house and he was in the same boat. That kid fought. He was a four-time All-American, and he didn't know what the heck he wanted to do either.
Yeah, he's 157. Kind of limiting his chances
and
in our world.
You know, he started pursuing a career in avionics, and then now he's a pilot. He's flying for Delta. And so he told me to get out and let's go see what's going on. And then I started kind of visiting with the coaches again and said, you know, started to put a game plan together, construct
right.
something. What do you want to do? Do you want to train for the Olympics? Do you want to be a pro wrestler? Do you want to try for the NFL? What do you want to do? Because I was, or you can be a coach here and stay.
But you could also stay at a dairy farmer. You ready to get off that farm and go out and strike your own
fortune? This is how bad I wanted to get off the farm. When I was 17 years old, a junior in high school, the Army National Guard recruiter came to school, and I was 17, a junior, and he came during a study hall period. And I'm sitting next to my buddy, and this guy's telling us, you know, you can come and train next summer, and you can, you know, they'll pay for school and this, that, and the other thing. And I looked at him, and I'm like, man, I'm out of here. I'm going. Are you going to go with me? And he's like, I'll do it if you do it. And I didn't think he probably looked at me like, yeah, but I called my mom. She had to co-sign for me. I said, Mom, this is what I want to do. And off I went to boot camp.
Well, see, that's what I was wondering because when I read, okay, join the National Guard.
Yeah.
That was the impetus behind that. So how did you finally end up down in OVW? Did someone from WWE said, hey, man, we got something for you if you want a job?
Yeah, well, I had met the university wanted to protect me. So the coaches.
What do you mean protect
well,
you?
Well, they
from amateur wrestling to pro,
yeah,
like
just,
that?
Yeah, you know, okay. So you're making this leap. Like, you know, these guys that are coming out of school, let's say you're on the football team and you're going to enter the draft. Well, we need to surround you with a team of people that is going to protect you.
Right.
You know, so because you need to be protected in this business.
Oh, we're going to get to that in a minute. Okay, so anyway, you end up down at OVW. And you got Randy Orton, you got Batista, you got John Cena, Dan Austin. You come into that mix. You come into that structure. You come into that learning tree. Look at all these guys.
Look at that.
Look at those young bucks. Boy, look at the talent right there. God dang, we got a Hall of Fame going here. What were your thoughts when you first got exposed to
these guys?
Yeah, these guys. What were your thoughts, dude? You didn't grow up a fan? You know how to wrestle?
When I got down to Louisville, Kentucky, I drove. I packed everything up. It was 13 hours from Minneapolis, Minnesota, down to Louisville. And I had somebody down there that I knew, Shelton Benjamin.
Yep.
Who's not up there.
Your roommate in college.
Roommate in college. And so I moved in with him, but then we went to the training center, and I was kind of blown away by the training facility because it was just
barbaric.
It was barbaric. And blown away in a good way because it reminded me of, it kind of took me back to where I came from. Like, you know, growing up in South Dakota is kind of barbaric. The weight room that I grew up in, barbaric. The wrestling room, barbaric. So, I mean, I loved it. I loved the facility.
You spent some time down there. You learned your chops. All of a sudden, you get called up to the main roster. You ever take around what you got?
Yeah, but before I moved down there, a very important piece of the puzzle here, I had to finish up some wrestling camps. And when I signed on a dotted line with the company the first time, Jim Ross was the guy that I was working with at the time, and I had some prior commitments, some wrestling camps. So I said I'm advertised for these shows, and I think it showed them a little bit that my commitment to, you know, listen, if I'm booked, I'm going to show up at these places.
Right.
So I can't move down there when you want me to move down there, and so maybe it showed something in me that they liked or didn't like. I don't know, but at the time,
You're a man of your word.
Yeah, I'm a man of my word, and I wanted to go back and do this and make sure that I would get to these wrestling camps. But so while I was there and still living in Minnesota, I decided that I was going to get connected with a guy by the name of Brad Rangins. And so JR agreed that I would start working with right. Brad. And I did. I went to Brad's every day, and Brad acquired a group of guys for me to learn the business. Kurt Hennig, Wayne Bloom, you know, a few other guys that I could put on the list. Dan Jesser, a guy that took a gazillion bumps from me. So these guys kind of took me under their wing. I was a Minnesota guy. I was a national champion. I was the hometown hero of Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Right.
And you know, the tri-state area. I mean, it was just it was a big thing. If I would have went to school any other place in Minnesota, I don't think I would have gotten the notoriety that I had gotten by going to school there.
It seemed like all the pieces fell into place for you.
Yeah.
But when you got called up to the big roster, it was interesting because, man, I was still on fire, but I was going to fade off in about a year and a half from when you first came in. And like I said, when I first saw you, I said, man, this kid's got a hell of a look. He's got some talent. He's going to be something. You caught on to the business. I put you up there. You know, Kurt Angle's an Olympic gold medalist. As far as catching on to our business, I've never seen anybody gravitate toward it like you and him did. But when you came in, it was so interesting because Kurt Hennig took an immediate liking to you, and so did the big boss man, Ray Trader.
Yeah,
he loved you to death.
Yeah.
He would just go on and on about you.
Yeah.
How did those guys help you?
Well, these guys, of course, I met Kurt, you know, in Minnesota through Brad Rangins. Brad and Kurt were very good friends. And then I met Ray through Kurt when I got up here with the company. You know, so I started traveling with these guys. I wanted to, you know, I wanted to learn and learn from these guys. And, you know, you spend a lot of time going up and down the road. The best time to learn is in the car.
Yes, sir.
And that's what, you know, Kurt and Brad told me, you know, just ask these guys. So I would ask Kane and Taker, can I jump in the back and ride in the back seat? I'll pump gas. I'll do whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and they let me ride with them a few times. And, And then I started riding with Kurt and Boss Man, and you know, like, we talked this morning. You know, you called me. I was on my way to the airport. We had a conversation about, you know, breaking down this business a little bit and understanding. For these guys, what I could credit these guys to is kind of giving me some psychology in the wrestling business, you know, and some to open some doors to how to put a match together. As we all know, this is you know, it's pure entertainment, but not always.
It's entertainment, but I'll tell you what, there's a lot that goes into that.
Everything. So I mean, but. Just having those guys in my ear and kind of grooming me to and smarting me up to things and,
right.
and having the opportunity, because those guys they put on a lot of miles and a lot of bumps in the ring.
Here's the thing: you're riding down the road with these veterans. You're swapping out cars. You're pumping gas. You're paying your dues, and you're learning. You're asking questions.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, man, within you know a short time. All of a sudden, you're in the ring with The Rock, the most electrifying man in sports entertainment, and bam, one, two, three.
My first match was they took me to Australia, and I'm in the ring. I'm in a triple threat match with Dwayne and Paul Levesque, Triple H, and I was just having this conversation with Triple H a few days last time I was at TV about him and Dwayne kind of just leaving me out of the loop on purpose. Because to get out there and that's the only way you learn is if
right.
you're out there, you
yeah.
know. And so
it's sink or swim.
Yeah, you better swim or you know you're gone. So it was a great opportunity for me. And Dwayne did a lot of Dwayne. That was really really awesome. Dwayne was leaving, and people can say what they want about Dwayne in the business, but I tell you what, the guy was. He taught me to be selfish. He taught me to watch my back. And if you're gonna thrive in this business, you know, you gotta be selfish. And I the night that he was not selfish to me, I won the WWE championship from him. And it's a give and take, but there's certain times you take, and you got the time for giving.
You won that title right off the, you know, very very quickly. And did all of a sudden you think, hey man, this is gonna be an easy ride? I'm a champion.
No. I guess to me the business was so new and so intriguing. When I first got on the road, I was going up and down the road, you know, drinking beers, staying in different hotels, staying in different different environments,
gimmicks, yeah.
And you know, so it was all very intriguing and stimulating in the beginning, you know. So.
Yeah, got me a couple divorces. Yeah, so.
So the stimulation factor of everything and then the reality of everything, you start living your life. Everything, you know, you portray this person on TV and you portray all these things, and then people start we don't really change. I've never really changed. I've gotten a little rougher around the edges, but the people around you change.
Right.
And they treat you differently. So that you have to you
But
have
also
to be
is
different.
It people's perception of you from seeing you be this guy on TV, feed into it, and they want to define who and what you are when not necessarily that's the case.
Well, really, I'm no different on TV than I really am. I really don't like people. I'm sorry, I don't. That's just who I am.
Talk to me about that. What do you mean you don't like people?
I just don't like being around a bunch of people, and it's kind of ironic because I can go out in an arena full of 20,000 people and be all right with it, only because I feel like I'm in this dome and I'm protected, you know. But you get me out in public or anywhere around a bunch of people, and I don't do well.
Are you antisocial, or is it, man, I don't want to say a phobia. Is it just...
Not a phobia, no. I just don't... I get uncomfortable.
You don't mix well with others for
no,
a shoot.
No, I don't play well.
And it's not like you're trying to be... That's just who you are.
That's just who I am. That's why I live out in the middle of nowhere. That's why I got an 8-foot fence around my property. That's why I shut the gate when I come and go. That's just who I am.
You're listening to another classic episode of The Steve Austin Show, only on Podcast One.
you main evented WrestleMania 19 with Kurt Angle, and in part of the match, you go for a shooting star press, and you land on your effing head. I mean, he was too far out. I know you've done this move before, yeah. And I don't know if you remember this or not, but I came up to you after I found out you was okay, and that was going to be my watch us. Yeah. Dude, that hurts me to watch that because I've been in a similar position.
Oh. I'm lucky.
You know, no, so lucky. I fix to say that. You're a big bad dude, but you're lucky as hell, and I think I was too. Here's the thing.
Let me cut you off.
Go ahead.
That was a moment in my career where I realized. And where I failed to take advice from other veterans, I was not being selfish there. I was talked in to do that.
Right.
I wasn't comfortable with doing it.
Right.
And I'm not going to say who talked me into it.
But because you were so athletic that you tried
it
out.
I had done it before, and I was young and stupid at the time. Could I do it? Absolutely. Should I have done it? No. But was the person that was telling me that I should do this, it would be a WrestleMania moment. Boy, why not have a WrestleMania moment? And I sure did, I guess.
But I don't know if you remember this, but I was mad at you. I was concerned about you, but I was mad at you for doing that because you didn't need to do that.
No, I didn't.
And you hadn't done it since, and now you gauge yourself accordingly. You're a big, physical, brutal guy in the ring. You have a style that is you can't see through. All your stuff looks badass. It's a shoot, so you're in a great place. But I want to take you, you know, back again to WrestleMania 20. Man, we're in Madison Square Garden. I'm a damn referee wearing a zebra shirt. You're working against Bill Goldberg. And then
throw these numbers out to me. You remember WrestleMania numbers. As soon as you – I don't
– That's because I read a lot about you.
There's no correlation between me and WrestleMania. But if you – now that you name Bill Goldberg – see, that's to me – that's the difference for me. Like I look at this purely as a business. You know what I mean? This is what I put on the table. Like guys can name certain matches that they have,
right.
Or guys can go back, and I can't do that.
Well, I forgot half the stuff, because
sure.
But when we go back to this match, and you guys were both going to end up leaving, this match, it was a little bit of a cluster.
Well, neither one of us wanted to be there.
Why didn't you want to be there? Because it's WrestleMania 20.
Because I didn't give a.
I know, but it's WrestleMania 20, and you're the main event. Or, I don't know if it's the main event. Stone Cold is ref. It's got to be a high-profile match. But you were leaving. Why did you leave?
That was to Vince right there. That wasn't to the fans. Everybody took that the wrong
way. Okay, but why was that to Vince?
No, that was just me. I had had enough of the business. Like I said, it was.
Man, we're only 2 years in.
I know. I didn't.
Was it the road?
It was the road. It was the people. The everything. You know. It was. I was becoming this person that I never thought I would be. I felt entrapped. I felt like I was a trapped animal. I can remember times being on an airplane and wanting to punch the door open and jump out of the plane.
I'm glad you didn't do that while I was on air with you.
But, I mean, that's what I felt like.
Yeah.
It was just I tell Vince to this day, I was built to be in the ring.
Right.
I wasn't built to be – to get from ring to ring.
Yeah.
So
you don't like that process.
No.
You put you in a damn ring. If they can just put you in a time machine and get you there, you're good to go.
Yep.
So you left.
Yeah.
I mean, what was there a void? Because that's when you're going to segue off into the football thing. We covered that. But what were your thoughts when you left? Because
I never had a plan, Steve. The NFL was an scapegoat for me.
Right.
It wasn't that I wanted to pursue a passion to be a football player. I was just pulling at strings. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And if all I was ever going to be after that was a dairy farmer in South Dakota, I was going to be all right with it. But there was something deep inside me that I decided that, you know what, this isn't it for me. It's not it.
But then, did I jump too far forward? Because was that when you were started going to Japan? Because did you sue WWE or the WWE sue you?
Oh, man, I don't know. We got the wrong guy in here, maybe. I don't know.
Did you pull the trigger first?
Does it really matter? I left the company.
Well, I'd like to know.
And you know what? We That's water under the bridge for me. I mean,
okay.
Okay, we're talking
about the water under the bridge.
Yeah.
Okay, the water's under the bridge. You come back, and we're going to go to MMA here in a second, but has, in your comings and going, has there ever been any dissension in the locker room, or someone maybe have a grudge against you? Well, he comes, he goes, he leaves, he comes back. You know, what's the deal with Brock?
No.
Do you go out of your way to hang out with the boys? I mean, because you're independent. You don't like people.
No, I don't.
But are the boys different?
No, I don't. When I came back, I don't know anybody here. You know, when I came back, there's a handful of guys.
You're right about that.
But no, not really. I shouldn't say. I guess I look at this. I clock in and I clock out. What's wrong with that? All right.
Right.
I know people that do it every day. They clock in, they clock out. I come, I do my work. I don't bother anybody. If I piss you off along the way, too effing bad.
But it's a job.
It's a job.
I can respect that.
It's a job. It's no different than me putting on my singlet at the University of Minnesota. Hey, we need you to go out there and win tonight.
Right.
But unfortunately, they weren't putting any money in my bank account.
Right.
So.
Got a pop from the peanut gallery over here. Let's talk about the world of MMA. All of a sudden, you up and go to the world of MMA. You have a legit wrestling background. You're a bad dude. You're salty. How did this relationship go? Did you just call up Dana White out of the blue and said, hey, dude, I'm coming in?
Well, so when I left the company and I didn't make the team for the NFL, the Minnesota Vikings, at that time.
And your coaches all said that you won their respect.
Yeah, they wanted to send me over to Europe. But I said, I had enough piss warm milk. I don't need any more of that. I'm going to stay home.
So how'd you call Dana?
So I went to New Japan, did some wrestling over there, and then discovered at the time that there was some fighting going on, and the Japanese wanted me to fight. And I was really unsure about it at the time. Then my agreement with New Japan Pro Wrestling at the time expired, and then I decided I was going to pursue a career as a fighter. And so the very first, and I had some Japan connections, and I signed with a K-1, a company that promoted mixed martial arts. And fought at the LA Coliseum, did my first fight there, and it was a one-fight contract. And at that time, I was trying to reach out to Dana White because I wanted to fight for the UFC.
Was he not taking you seriously?
He wasn't taking my calls. He wasn't doing it. So I told my manager at the time, I said there was a fight coming up that I wanted to go to. It was Randy Couture and Gabriel Gonzaga.
Yeah.
It was for the heavyweight championship. Randy had the belt. And Gabriel Gonzaga was an upcoming guy.
He was on his own fire back then.
He was hot, and he was tough. I mean, and so I said, I want to buy. I'm going to buy my own seats. I went and sat as a spectator down at Mandalay Bay. And after the fights, I jumped the security railing, ran to the octagon, grabbed Dana by the shoulder, spun him around, introduced myself, and that's what I did.
Yeah.
I did. That's exactly what I did. And
where'd it go from there?
He pulled me back, and we had a meeting, and he took me seriously, and we talked about everything but money at the time, because at the time I didn't care. I wanted to prove myself, get in the octagon. I said, you sign me, you won't go wrong. Sign me for a one-fight deal, and let me prove to you, if I can't sell pay-per-view buys for you, then you don't have me back.
Put your money where your mouth is. That's exactly what you did. Let's go to that first match. It was Frank Mir, submission expert. He's one of the best heavyweight submission guys of all time. And you go in there, and, man, it's a damn good fight. And then just at one point, it's almost like you left your foot dangling like a lure in the water, and like a big mountain bass, he grabbed that thing. I look like an ankle lock. He called it a knee bar, whatever. Dude, when he grabbed that hold on you, was it unlike anything that you'd ever been put in before because you didn't really know the submission ropes?
No.
And how was it? Because when you started tapping him, it was like, dude, I don't want to do this, but I'm doing it.
Yep. I was disgusted with myself because I had trained to get out of that hold the whole entire training camp. And I couldn't, for some reason, I don't know if it was, I can't explain it. I put my foot maybe it was I was doing repetitions wrong in practice. So you'd get up and you'd start over, and then you put your foot in, and it was like I was
I was dangling like, for him. Yeah, I was like,
and
God
I was like, you got to be kidding me. And I just did that. And so at that point, when it was over, there's a picture of me holding my my hands around my waist, and I just saw my entire life just fall off the cliff because I thought, well, Dana's not going to re-sign me. I lost. And I know I'm smart enough to know that the only way that I'm getting paid is by winning and staying on top. And I'm
right.
So I went back. I went back to the dressing room, and Dana came back, and he was just bouncing off the walls.
Really
happy. He's like, dude, that was awesome.
Yeah.
You know, just couldn't believe it. And then I said, I looked up at him. I said, is it over, man? He said, no, not at all. And I was like, thank God. And so we went back to the drawing board, and I ended up signing, I don't know, like a 3-6 fight contract with him. And I ended up fighting, my next fight was against a kid out of Texas here, Texas Crazy Horse, Heath Herring.
Dude, you let him, when you charged across that octagon and just tackled that dude because you was putting a pretty good, you hit him with it was a big right hand or left hand, either or, but then all of a sudden he kind of rolled, and then all of a sudden you just speared him like it was my football player, and I'm sure that guy, I mean, he's like, what the F is this guy made of?
Yeah,
what was your mentality there? Because dude ain't never been the same.
I went in, no, he's never fought again. I don't even know what, I'd like to talk
to him. I don't mean it's any disrespect
to
him.
No, I don't, yeah. I hope he's doing well and everything. He never fought again, I never heard.
Dude, I jumped off my couch when I saw that. It was the craziest thing I'd ever seen.
I got to hand it to him. The guy took 15 minutes of an
and he's tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a reputation to be able to take a punch. All of a sudden, you go Randy Couture. Boom.
Yeah, you know the mentality when you get into the octagon. For me, and the funny thing about this fight here too is we shared a locker room. Me and Heath Herring. His locker room was across the hall, and as a competitor, your whole life you don't want to fight off of aggression. You don't want to wrestle off of aggression. You don't want to wrestle. It's a competition.
That's interesting.
You want to go out and cool, calm, and collective, calm before the storm. And so everything was fine until his entrance music hit. And on their way past my locker room, he said, I'm going to show this that this shit's...
Oh, no. That lit a fire in your ass.
That lit a fire under my ass. And so I went out and I said, well, all right, here we go. And so that's why between round one or two, I gave him the fist pump and kind of winked at him and said, yep. And I told him that out there. When I was riding his ass out there, I said, you know, this is real, buddy. This is real.
Talk about a long dead office.
Yeah.
when you stepped into the ring with Couture, the octagon, and you caught him with a shot, you're the UFC champion. What's going through your mind?
Oh, well, I was just thankful to Dana that he gave me that opportunity. Dana was no dummy, and Lorenzo, the Fertitta brothers, they seen this opportunity. I was selling pay-per-views, and Randy, they were trying to get Randy back because he had left with the belt. And so we need to get this belt on a new champion. And really at the time, I have to say, the heavyweight division was a little weak.
Right.
You know, came in.
But that being said, let's talk about your weakness, which was imposed by diverticulitis.
Yeah.
How was that?
That was really unfair for me. I to this day, I probably wouldn't. I don't know if I'd be a pro wrestler if I hadn't gotten sick.
Right.
I may not be here. I'd still be banging heads.
At what percent do you think you competed at in the UFC with that? Because, I mean, did we ever see you at 100%?
Yeah, you saw me fight against Randy and you know, but it got worse. It started when I got halfway through a training camp. And I just I knew something was wrong. I thought, gosh, there's something physically wrong with me. So I need to figure it out. But stubborn me, I didn't get a CT scan of my stomach. And I decided to pull the fight and drive up to Canada and sit in my deer stand.
But I heard you fell out. You almost died.
Yeah, I did.
Where was that at? And where was that come to Jesus at?
That was in Canada.
And then you come back down to the States.
And I come to the States, and then I fought it off, and I my doctor came into my room when I got to the States and said, "Listen, son, you've got diverticulitis. If your fever doesn't go down, I'm giving you antibiotics right now, a lot of antibiotics. I'm going to give you 8 hours. I'm going to try to save your fight career." He knew who I was.
Yes.
He knew my history. "I'm going to try to save your fight career, but if I can't and I got to save your life, I'm saving your life before I'm saving your career, son."
You got to appreciate that.
And I appreciated that. So when I went to, he gave me 8 hours. They're wheeling me into the emergency or into the operating room, and my fever was still at 104.3 something. And I remember the lights, I remember them prepping me for surgery, and then I remember waking up and I was in my room, and I had thought, you know what, he saved my life and not my career. And I woke up and I said, what's going on? And he said, "We were just about ready to cut you open, and you broke your fever." And I said, "Boy, don't I?"
But you end up having to go under the knife.
I end up having, yeah, so I looked down and I wasn't, you know, busted open or anything. So I thanked him, and I wasn't sure if maybe that wasn't the right decision. He was trying to do the best for me, but if I would have had to have the surgery at that time,
right,
it would have been, you know, done.
So then it turns out you end up coming back after 7-8 years gone from WWE. When you decided, you know, finally to hang up the gloves and come back, what were you thinking? I mean, because all the bad blood, you said water under the bridge earlier, but I mean, all that bad blood, how do you mend that fence that was so broken with Vince? Because I've broken a few of those.
Yeah, didn't you walk out one time?
Okay, you want to talk about that? We'll talk about that. Okay, let's talk about when I walked out, because I want to know what you thought about that. Because check it out, here's what happened. They called me up.
I'll tell you right off the bat. I didn't care. I didn't feel like it was on me. Not at all.
Didn't hurt your feelings? Steve.
No, not at all.
We've always been cool, but I never got your take on it.
No, I was trying to jump out.
Here's the deal, man. I mean, you got this big badass son. It's coming in here. I smell money as soon as you walked in the door, and all of a sudden, guys like me, I ain't gonna blow smoke.
All I know is you didn't want to do the job for me.
Hey, it's kind of, you know, they're kind of hard to come by. And so why don't we main event, you know, down the road when you're ready?
Right. You ain't got to explain it to me.
It didn't make sense. Unadvertised match. It didn't make a lick of sense to me. I handle that in the worst possible way, and I've always admitted that.
Well, and maybe you handle it in the wrong way, but maybe somebody on the other side could have handled it better too.
Again,
it's a two-way street here, and that's when I came back to this company a couple years ago. It's a two-way street. For me, I had to be able to do what I wanted to do. And it's a give and take thing, and that's
talk about a two way street in comparison to talking with two world class promoters and Vince McMahon and Dana White. What's the differences between those guys? They're both very smart, great, big egos. You've been with both of them.
Well, I mean, how can't you have a big ego? You got a big bank account, and I don't know if you would. I got a big bank account, nothing on and no standards, but people think I got an ego problem, but.
But it's control
Dana,
as well.
Dana White and Vince McMahon, I got to thank them both for putting a lot of money in my bank account. If I was going to sit here and compare,
hard-earned money, let me add.
Oh, absolutely. I fought for every penny of it. But I think Dana, you know, Dana was really good to me, and the Fertitta brothers they're very good guys. I could sit down and have a conversation. We worked all of our deals out across the table. And it was a done deal. There was no posturing. There was no leverage. There was
straight up business.
It was straight up business. And hey, that's not fair. Make it fair, and we'll sign.
Okay, but was it straight up business when you came back and recently re-signed with WWE, or were you really considering going back to the UFC?
Was it the second time?
Yes.
No, it wasn't a bluff. No, I really. Because I had felt robbed. I felt robbed.
By who?
By diverticulitis.
Okay, gotcha.
I felt robbed by being sick. I wasn't.
And now that you were whole again,
I was feeling good. It took me a couple of years to kick out. I mean, it took me a couple of years to start feeling good. I mean, I'm at home. I'm working out. My life is great. Everything's in tune. My contract's coming to an end with WWE. Hey, it's been a great time. but something's missing. So, and I was up front and totally honest with the company and told them, listen, I'm really thinking of pursuing and getting back in the Octagon. And I started training camp. I wanted to test myself and see where I was, not more physical, but mentally. I want to see the mental challenges that it was going to take, because if your head ain't on and your head's not in the game, the last place you want to get into is in the Octagon.
Okay, speaking of just on a different thing, but we're talking about drawing money. Your promos in the UFC, I loved them, because that was Brock being Brock. And so your promos here, you don't speak as much. You start laughing about the promos.
I got to feed the Jew. he's got to eat.
So do you not like talking here? Were you more able to go out on a limb in the UFC? Paul Heyman is par excellence as far as a manager goes. He's a good friend of mine. What's your views on promos?
I guess I'm not good at them. Hell, I don't know. Me and Paul were just a fit, and when they decided to bring me back, I probably wouldn't be who I am today without Paul Heyman speaking for me.
Yeah,
because along the way, you know, Paul can put in the words and build me. I don't need to talk.
Correct.
I don't think I do, but my actions speak loud.
I'm with you.
Loud. So I think it's a great combination. And when I first came back, I was minus Paul Heyman, and I think they threw me out there just to see, you know, where I was. You know, I mean, cutting a promo after a fight with Joe Rogan, hey, ask me a question, is not the same as cutting a promo, getting in the ring, promoting right. a fight or a match with such and such. So I spoke from the heart after my fights, because that's just, there's so much emotion involved.
Right.
There's so much pent-up emotion inside in a fight. People don't appreciate what really goes into it.
Man, when you're going to an Octagon or coming from an Octagon back to the dressing room, just like tonight, I got the chance to go out in front of a live crowd. I haven't been in front of a live crowd in forever. It jazzed me up. It just shot me full of adrenaline. It was wonderful. Does a fight crowd affect you like that? Because you just said you've got to be calm, cool, collected. So my question is crowd. Does it connect? Do you hear them while you're fighting? Can they help you?
Sometimes you can. Absolutely. You can. But when I was in that arena, in the fight arena, in the competition arena, I wouldn't have known if there was 10 people out there or 10,000, quite honestly. In the wrestling business, I feel them.
Right.
Probably, I don't know why, the difference is, you know, it's entertainment, and that was, you know, that was real. It's the hat that I put on. You know, when right. I put my competition hat on, you go, I'm in a whole other place. You know,
so competition, when you think here in the WWE, the landscape right here, when you look around at the roster, do you call these guys your friends, your coworkers, the boys? There's that inner circle. What's your relationship with you or your relationship with them, and how competitive is this environment here? Because it was a son of a bitch back in my days, and I know it still is today. But what's your views on where you're at today?
Me here this time, I'm not involved with the people so much. I'm more hands on with Vince. I want to know my role from the beginning. I want to know, you know, kind of. I want to know where his thoughts are, where he wants me to be. So I don't have to kind of do the politicking or do the, you know, the make friends with people to, you know, I just
want to come and go.
I just want to come and go and tell me what I'm doing. If I don't like it, can I dispute it? Can I put an honest effort into trying to put a different spin on something? You know, is this how it's going to be? Or you know, and if he's adamant about it, then fine. At the end of the day, I work for the man, and that's what I'll do.
I remember watching WrestleMania 30, and your wrestling The Undertaker. You broke the streak. Man, I was back in a production truck. I had two beers, a beer in each hand. And all of a sudden, man, I saw what happened. And all of a sudden, you break the streak. What did breaking the streak mean to you as a man or a competitor, businessman?
Well, a businessman, I knew it was big for me. I knew it was, I knew that this streak had been protected for so long that it was special. It was almost it was almost bigger than me winning a WWE championship. If you want to say that, and I understood that. I get a lot of criticism for it, maybe, but quite honestly, people who in the wrestling industry has enough credentials to actually break the streak? Is there another man out there with enough believability, enough
credibility?
Is there really, honestly, is there somebody else out there? No, I don't think so.
I could agree with that. What do you think is the biggest misconception about the man named Brock Lesnar in people's minds?
Nah, I don't really care. I don't if they're misconcepted. I really don't, Steve. I've never been a person that really got offended by what somebody thought of my actions or what somebody thought of how I carry myself. At the end of the day, I try to be nice to people. Unless you really step over across a line or whatever, then. But at the end of the day, I just like to do my own thing, Steve.
Okay, well, check this out. Since high school, you're going to the record, the JUCO national champion from wrestling, NCAA, pro football field, octagon. How much gas you got left in the tank? Where in your head are you right now? I mean, are you enjoying this ride so much you could do it forever? Do you see where this is going?
Yeah, I got a pretty good idea where it's going to go. Yeah.
You got a pretty good idea?
I got a good idea where it's going, yeah. Yeah, do I want to share with you or anybody? No, I don't.
But you're having fun.
I'm having a good time.
And you're doing business.
I'm doing business, and it's one of those things where I think people fight to get into this business, and I left the business whether or not Vince and I saw eye to eye when I left, but I think him and I both realized that it's probably made us both more money that I did leave. I could be wrong, but I know
no,
but, because of the circumstances when I left and went out and made a name for myself and became the UFC heavyweight champion, I piggybacked the WWE label on my back. And getting back to that, when I fought Heath Herring, he was going to show me that this was for real and this isn't WWE.
Right.
So I transferred a lot of stuff back to the company, and we were able to make a deal, and here I am, you know, for a few more years.
Before I bring this thing to the bottom line, what advice would the Brock Lesnar of today give the Brock Lesnar of when you first started? Or dare say, just some rookie kid, a lot of potential.
If I was to look at some rookie kid and to tell him, you know, make sure that this is what you want to do, make sure you understand all the circumstances, make sure that, you know, that this is the path that you want to live. But you don't want to hold anybody back from their dream. I mean, I think it's a great opportunity for people. I think people nowadays, they think, and kids nowadays expect, oh, this things are just handed over and, you know, I'm going to get an allowance, but I ain't going to do nothing for it. I think this generation, people are always, they don't want to work for something. I think if you sit back and you're not going to work for something in your life, you're going to have absolutely nothing. That's what you're going to get.
I appreciate that, and I agree with you 100%. I'll say that being said, working for something, I got to bring it back. Let's get down to some serious business. You got Undertaker and Hell in a Cell this coming Sunday. What are your thoughts on that? Destruction, devastation to the Undertaker. This is one of the scariest matches that you can be in. It's going to take a physical toll.
Yeah.
You've done it before. Your thoughts on this? It's going to be the last time on the WWE Network.
Well, I'm prepared for when you. It's no different when you step inside that cage. That cage isn't very forgiving, and I'll guarantee you this. There's going to be a lot of a lot of carnage. I believe I'm coming to end the Undertaker. Quite frankly, I'm kind of irritated with him. I'm over it. And when this opportunity came to me, when Vince brought this opportunity to me and said, I don't feel the way that our last match went, like I said, I got a chip on my shoulder, and I'm coming to hurt this man.
So you're coming with a mean streak. It's going to happen this Sunday. It's Hell in a Cell. Hey, man. Good talking to you, big ass. I appreciate you sitting down, and we got to go hunting. My name is Stone Cold Steve Austin. I'm coming to you from Dallas, Texas on the WWE Network. I'm sitting here with a good buddy, Brock Lesnar. He's going to do damage and Hell in a Cell. I got respect for both men. It's Brock Lesnar versus The Undertaker, and you can see it. It's going to be a damn sure, damn good match, and that's the bottom line, because these two guys are legends, and I said so. We're out.
Thank you for joining us for another classic episode of The Steve Austin Show. Please leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts and tell your friends. For more Steve Austin Show, go to podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
All month long on Pluto TV, stream the biggest Tyler Perry movies free. Watch your favorites like Madea's Witness Protection and Madea's Big Happy Family. Join Tyler Perry as he goes on a couples retreat with Sharon Leal in Why Did I Get Married? Or Idris Elba and Gabrielle Union in the Tyler Perry-directed film Daddy's Little Girls. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies and TV shows available on live and on demand. Download the free Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in. Watch free.
Hey, Friday Night Lights fans. It's Not Only Football, Friday Night Lights and Beyond is an episode-by-episode discussion of the hit TV series Friday Night Lights, hosted by yours truly, Scott Porter, who played Jason Street on the show, and my two wonderful co-hosts.
Me, Zach Guilford, a.k.a. Matt Saracen.
And me, Mae Whitman, a.k.a. someone who wasn't on the show, but really, really loves it a lot.
We will also bring on some special guests, answer your questions, and tell you about what's going on in our lives today.
It's Not Only Football. Friday Night Lights and Beyond is available now wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Clear eyes, full hearts, can't lose!